Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Welcome to Rich Answers, a public affairs program of the Conference of Churches and a production of the 224 Ecospace, where changemakers work, create, and lead. Today we are fortunate to have with us Reverend Aaron Miller, who is the senior pastor of Metropolitan Community Church of Hartford, a compassionate community of faith and a spiritual home where all people can experience the liberating love of God. Welcome.
Great to be here.
Great to have you here. So why don't you give us some background? Where were you born and tell us about your childhood?
All right. I was born in Long Island and I lived until I was in sixth grade there and then moved to Weston, Connecticut and have moved around the state quite a bit ever since. I went to school in Long Island, Weston, Connecticut. I graduated, went to Keikyo Post University, first for my associates. Then I went to
Yale Divinity School.
Yes, I did. I just jumped right to that. So the history of it's not as clear to me as where I ended up, and one of the best education experiences one could ever have.
So as you think about your childhood, how did it prepare you for your faith journey at this time?
Well, it started off, my mother was terminally ill for 25 years. And so I was more chaplain than child to her. And that started me with a sense of empathy and compassion that most children don't start with. So that my mother, even though bedbound for the last 5 years, she conducted or orchestrated and facilitated Bible studies from her bed. And she had people gathered around. So I saw her faith in action. I didn't quite understand it because I was angry at that time, thinking that God had forsaken my mother. But in fact, she told me, and as I have now come to understand, that was her journey. And she welcomed her disease because it brought her to God.
And what was her disease?
Gaucher's disease, which is a pretty rare blood disease.
Wow. And so as you think about your childhood and that faith formation, unpack that a little bit more. How did you learn about God?
Well, I came through the side door on that, watching more than participating. I was baptized congregational. I was confirmed Lutheran. And I was part of MCC, you know, later in my years when I came back to faith. But my mother was also Jewish. So all that side of my family is Jewish. So I tell the story that I'm ecumenical and I'm interreligious. I'm kind of a blank paper, right, to start with from religion. But I fell away from religion for quite a while, and it was MCC that brought me back, having nowhere to turn and in grieving for my mother and a failed relationship. I found myself at MCC crying in the pew and them holding hands with me, singing a song, The Presence of God, in the presence of God, and I knew I was home.
And so describe MCC.
So MCC was started in 1968. It was started predominantly for the LGBTQ community because the founder of our denomination, Reverend Troy Perry, was defrocked when he came out as gay. So he had this soul, dark night of the soul journey, and he heard the voices around him saying that God doesn't love us. And he knew then that he was called to start a church. And he started the church with 12 people in his living room, and we're now in 40 countries. But the specialized or calling on this denomination is to make sure that those in the LGBTQ community and beyond know that they are loved by God and most definitely intentionally created, loved unconditionally, just like everyone else.
And unpack that a little bit more for us. Talk about that time in the life of our community when he founded the church and why he in particular decided to found a church.
Well, back then in those days, Stonewall and all of that were the way it was. You know, a bar would open and people would gather. But we did not come out in churches because churches did not allow or welcome people who had different sexual orientations and gender identities. And so we were separated from the very things that we know are faith-based, life-giving, and life-affirming. And so he ended up attempting suicide. And somebody came over to him, as the story goes, a woman, and hit him, I think, on the side of the arm in the emergency department, said, "You need to start a church." And so God sent messages and messengers to him, and then he started this denomination, albeit in his living room.
And so when we think about the times and really the evolution of our community from 1975, you said, when it was founded? 1968. So when we look at, as you said, Stonewall and sort of a consciousness about LGBTQ people, when we look at who we are as a community, in this short amount of time, there finally is a time and space where people are like, oh, the community exists, we're here. And so that does indeed make a difference. And now it's interwoven in the faith. So talk about your call to ministry.
Well, that's interesting because I felt I was a chaplain, as I've said, you know, all of my life. So I went to Yale Divinity School to become a chaplain. And they told me on opening day that you can't become a chaplain here. So God withheld that from me in going to school. I graduated, and during the process, everybody was saying, I'm going to be a pastor. And I didn't feel that calling at that time. And it was later through a prophetic voice that said that you will have your church once all the sorrow around you leaves. And that 1 week later, my younger brother died. And so after a year of mourning, I was invited to be the interim minister for Metropolitan Community Church of Hartford, MCC Hartford. And I said yes, because for 35 years and more, I was a corporate manager. So for me, that's a skill set that's very comfortable. So I said, sure, I'll come there and help you determine and discern what it is you need in calling your pastor. And I fell in love as soon as I walked down the stairs. And a year and a half later, I was installed.
Installed.
It's a funny expression. I'm sorry.
Yes.
Installed.
Sort of like plugged in.
Yes, exactly.
Yes. And so unpacking a little bit more your call to ministry, you said you ended up at Yale. How did you walk in the door?
Well, I applied. Well, so to back that up just a little bit, I went to Albertus Magnus for a couple of my courses in the second half of my undergraduate. I graduated from Sacred Heart University. But I started at Albertus in World Religions because that's really where I have had most of my passion around and interest. And it was in the first class that I took there when I never felt more at home sitting in this world religions class, thinking that I finally feel like I'm where I'm supposed to be. And the entire room goes white as three letters are written up on the blackboard. And the professor said, these three letters are the root words for Salaam, Shalom, Islam, Muslim. And it means peace you surrender to God. And the letters were my initials. And at the time, my name has changed now, but at that time, those were my initials. And so everything went white. And I looked around, I thought everybody must notice what just happened here. And everybody was walking around talking, and then the white lifted. And I went up to the professor after, and I told him what happened. He said, you need to apply for Yale. You need to go to Yale. I said, well, thank you very much, but that's flattering, but I'm just going for my undergraduate. And he said, no, you need to go to Yale. And so when I graduated with my undergraduate, with religious studies as my major, the only one to graduate from with that major from a Catholic university, and on so many levels, that's, you know, interesting, I applied to Yale. And the reason I applied to Yale, because right at that same time, things were happening at my company and in the world that people were coming to me as a chaplain. And so I didn't have the credentials to really do that. So I thought, well, let me go and get the degree and the credentials that I need. What happened? We had 9/11. We had three tragic and traumatic employee deaths in that same year. Mm. And so the company was looking and rocking. And so I led them through that process without any qualifications. So I need to get those. And that's why I went to Yale.
And once again, you're talking about the white in the room where the initials are up on the board. And the term was peace or surrender to God?
Peace through surrender to God. And the initials are SLM.
Peace through surrender to God. And so why did you feel in yourself that you needed to seek peace or surrender to God?
Well, at the time, it made no sense to me. Okay. I just took all of this in, just like apply to Yale. All right. All of this was very foreign to me, but these are seeds. And as I've come to understand it, God knows that I am a large ship trying to move in the night. And so God has to plant seeds and direct me and messages and messengers all along the way for me to be open to what's happening next.
And for you at this time, were you on a spiritual quest? Were you in spiritual practice? Open that up.
No, not really. I have to say, I've never been a good student. I haven't been a good spiritual practitioner. You know, I would say that my spiritual journey is really walking with people. It's really their stories and our communion that has been driving me all along. In fact, I have a communion theology as my statement of faith to MCC when I applied for ordination.
And when you got to Yale, what did you discover?
That was the most amazing experience of my life. For years, I never stopped smiling. In the admissions, woman said she's never seen anybody smile as much as me.
Mm.
It was an amazing experience. My experience through that was really, I was having an education that almost anybody would buy for, right? And so I was privileged to be there and to learn at this level and to be called. And God was with me every step of the way, and I was very clear about that. But I was also very clear about the timing of it. I knew when I was going to graduate. So that part-time, I worked full-time while I did it. So I graduated in 4 years, not the six. And I was very well aware that there were things and a timing that I wouldn't know till it was time, but that I needed to get this done. And so I felt that sense of urgency, not sense of urgency, but just that everything was coming in it in God's timetable and timing.
We're talking with Reverend Aaron Miller about his ministry and his journey of faith, and we'll be back after the break.
I worship you. You are here working in this place. I worship you. I worship you. You are here moving in a mist. I worship you. I worship you. You are here working in this place. I worship you. I worship you. Hey, we make a miracle worker, promise keeper, light in the darkness. My God, that is who Waymaker, miracle worker, promise keeper, light in the darkness. My God, that is who you are. You are here, touching every heart. I worship you. I worship you. worship you. I worship you. I worship you. I worship you. You are here, mending every heart. I worship you. I worship you. Hey, we make a miracle walking promise keeper. Light in the darkness, that is who you are. Hey, we make a miracle walker, promise keeper. Light in the darkness, my God, that is who you are. You wipe away all tears, you mend the broken heart. You're the answer to it all, Jesus. You wipe away all tears, you mend the broken heart. You're the answer to it all, to it all, Jesus. Yeah. We make miracle work, promise keep. I worship you. You are here, meeting every need. I worship you. I worship you. Oh, de devotion, de amazeke ane.
It will be like when I walk by your side. I can only imagine what my eyes will see when your face is before me. I can only imagine. Surrounded by your glory, what will my heart feel? Will I dance for you, Jesus, or in awe of you be still? Will I stand in your presence, or to my knees will I fall? Will I sing hallelujah? Will I be able to speak at all? I can only imagine. I can only imagine. I can only imagine when that day comes and I find myself standing in the sun. I can only imagine when all I would do is forever, forever worship you. I can only imagine, yeah. I can only imagine. Surrounded by your glory, what will my heart feel? Will I dance for you, Jesus, or in awe of you be still? Will I stand in your presence, or to my knees will I fall? Will I sing being able to speak at all, I can only imagine. Yeah, I can only imagine. Surrounded by your glory, what will my heart feel? Will I dance for you, Jesus? Or in all of you be still? Will I stand in your presence? Or to my knees will I fall? Will I sing and hallelujah? I can only imagine when all I would do is forever, forever worship you. I can only imagine.
Welcome back. We're talking with Reverend Aaron Miller, who is the senior pastor of Metropolitan Community Church. And we were talking about your call to ministry. So tell us more about your first ministry.
Which was chaplaincy. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I mentioned about my mother and that. I've been at Yale New Haven Hospital now for 10 years. And that's ending at the end of this month. It's been a wonderful 10-year season. But chaplaincy, I have felt God's presence in ways that are undeniable. And truly miraculous in those rooms that when you talk about God with people anywhere, you're creating sacred space and holy ground. And the most amazing spiritual moments have happened in those rooms.
And so for you in chaplaincy, how did you end up walking into that arena? You felt called as a child, although maybe you didn't know it was a calling, but you found your way into chaplaincy. So how did you get there?
Well, as I said before, you know, I was a more chaplain than child to my mother because she needed someone to listen to her and all the pains and difficulties she was facing on this terminal illness path of hers as she came to faith. So I was that sounding board, but I was also the encourager for somebody that had very dark days. But I remember my father saying to me at one point, he said, "You know something, you can't carry the world on your shoulders." And I thought to myself, yes, I can. And I'm likely to, because that's always been my way. People talk to me easily, find a friend, an unjudgmental viewpoint, and a listening ear, and a caring heart. So that's really been my calling all along. And so I think that God said, I do think that God said, well, I know you want to be a chaplain, and you're going to do good work there, but I also need you to be a pastor. Mm-hmm. So let's agree to do both. And so I've been doing both for 8 years as a pastor. I was actually the associate minister for pastoral care at MCC New Haven before I came to Hartford. So for 10 years, since I was ordained in 08 and graduated in 08 from Yale, I've been doing both.
So talk about how you nurture your own soul.
Oh, okay, that's the challenge, isn't it? Self-care, it's something I preach, we all preach. Right? How well do I do that? I would tell you that I have not done it particularly well because most goes out and it's not something you can really draw great boundaries with. When people need your help, you can't say, well, you know, these aren't my office hours because a caring heart has to go to where there's need. And so for me, the way I get nurtured is I have a dog and I do dog walks. I find my spiritual renewal in predominantly two ways. One is listening to contemporary Christian music, and you couple that with my walks with Gracie. Her name's Grace. And those are my moments of grace. I walk with her in nature, and I remember how magnificent God is through music and also through the creative through creation.
And what's amazing, I have a dog also. And so in Hartford, when I'm staying here, I have a yard that is fenced in. So I can open the door and let Onyx out. When I'm in Plainville by the church, I have to take Onyx for walks. And it's actually a wonderful thing. It's a humbling thing. The leash, the dog, a little plastic bag. We walk and we ponder. And I have to be on Onyx time. And that is actually a wonderful thing. Mm-hmm. So tell me about Gracie. What kind of dog is she?
She's a schnoodle. You can't say that without laughing.
Okay.
Schnoodle is a schnauzer and a poodle mix.
Wow. And what color?
She's gray, and she's 13 and a half years old. So and now she's deaf.
Okay, but she's been on the journey with you along the way.
Oh, yes. And she's listened to me. She's listened to me the whole way. She's heard me preach. She's heard me sing. She's heard me wail. She's heard it all.
So tell us about your ministry today, and who are the people you specialize in serving?
So that also couples with my specific calling. And interesting that, you know, before you're ordained, they're always asking you, you know, they, meaning those who are going to ordain you, what is your call to ministry? They ask, and have you gotten the call? And I say, I'm waiting by the phone, and I haven't been called yet. To the particular ministry. And I didn't know what it was until my ordination interview week. So I went out for the interview week in Minnesota, and it was by the end of the week, and I was exhausted, but it was very clear that I was an imposter. So because I'm transgender, I was living two lives. And it was very clear to me. It was, in fact, when I got there, I had somebody come up to me saying, who I knew, hadn't seen for years. He said, I have a message from God. And he said, this has never happened to me before, but I have a clear message for you. And that is, your prayers will be answered, but not at all as you expect. By the end of the week, I understood what that meant, because I believe that God would have been fine with me if I'd stayed in the corporate world and lived this dual life that I was living. But I felt a call on me for ministry, and it was clear to me that God said, if you are going to minister in my name, you have to be authentic. And so I either had to transition or I had to stay in corporate business.
Wow.
So I knew I had this calling. And so I came home to transition, didn't even know what that was. I mean, 10 years ago, there was none of that, okay? There was no internet information. There was no training. There was none of that. There was nobody around me. And a friend of a friend of a friend introduced me to somebody they knew. And that was how I met the first friend I made in this walk. And God gave me Tony Ferriolo, and he does a lot of work now with youth in the transgender community. So so that was my calling, and I came home to transition, and that's what I did over the next couple of years. Of course, that's a lifetime event or a lifetime process, but the medical, you know, social, the legal, all of that was changed by 2009 in the surgical. So that was my calling. But I also didn't know exactly how that was going to happen, except that I knew I had to be authentic. That was the first step.
So align for me your transition with your calling to ministry and your seminary journey. How did those times fit together, or what came first, chicken or the egg?
Well, I went through Yale and graduated in 08, May of 08. And then I had my interview week. And then ordination was August, that summer. So, and I was ordained as a female presenting, but I was already started the transition right after that in September.
And how might things have been different if you were transitioning before Yale? Do you think it might have changed your experience or formation as a minister?
I don't know. I know that I was going to transition when I was 18. So that was the initial time I was going to do it, but it was going to cost a lot of money, and it was going to I would need a lot of therapy, and I was too young and had neither. I had neither the time nor the money to be able to pursue this. So I just lived the life that I best could. So I said I was gay and became part of the gay community, and that's the way I live my life, as a workaround, we would call it in business today. And but this, I hit the wall the second time in this interview week, where it was very clear to me that that was fine, but not in God's name.
And so as you look at your journey as a minister, talk about some of your ministry mentors. Who has helped you become the minister you are today?
Oh, That's an interesting thing, because I would tell you that my mentors were what led me to, South Africa. And I just came back in March. I went there for the month of March. And my heroes, there are four heroes that are from South Africa that I follow and wanted to walk in the footsteps of. And that's Archbishop Desmond Tutu, President Nelson Mandela, Gandhi, and Simon Nkoli.
It's me, Simon Nkoli.
I knew you were. So Simon Nkoli is my newest, greatest hero. He's a South African who came actually to the United States in the 70s. And the story of it is that he stayed with one of our founding members of MCC Hartford in the 70s while he was going to do some speaking tours. And so our hospitality has been there forever. And we got to meet this fellow. He went home. He was placed in prison. He was incarcerated for being a political activist. And so he got to meet Nelson Mandela in prison. And Nelson Mandela asked him if he would help him, if Simon would help him write the 1994, what would be the 1994 South African Constitution that ended apartheid. And Simon Nkoli said, "I will help you write that, but you also have to write in the protection for sexual orientation." And Nelson Mandela said, "You know, we need to end apartheid. That's the first and foremost." And Simon Nkoli, and I get chills telling this, he said, "No." He said, "I am a black man and I am a gay man, and I cannot separate the two, nor will I. And if I'm to help you, you have to write both protections in." And so that is why South African Constitution 1994 has both, and they're the first country to protect sexual orientation.
And how is that working in modern day South Africa today? Because I know that it's not easy to be gay on the continent of Africa in many situations. Talk about that.
True. And I would say that he opened the door. He died 3 months after that constitution was passed. So he actually was the Moses. He didn't get to see the promised land. And he opened the way for a more tolerant community. I wouldn't say welcoming quite yet, and I don't think that's true in any country.
No. We're talking with Reverend Aaron Miller, who is the senior pastor of Metropolitan Community Church, and we'll be back after the break. You have been listening to Rich Answers, a public affairs program of the Conference of Churches.
You give me everything. I can't hear you show me, when I can't stand you carry me, when I'm lost you will find me, when I'm weak you are mighty, you are
over.
Welcome back. We're talking with Reverend Aaron Miller, who is a senior pastor of Metropolitan Community Church. And so think about for a moment what difference your ministry is making in the world today.
So I think the first and foremost difference is really a boots on the ground kind of ministry that I'm doing. I do education at universities, hospitals, and other venues, faith communities in particular, about welcoming education, and then it's training around education and then welcoming transgender people. And so what I've found is that there's not a lot of education and people hearing stories and getting a firsthand walkthrough or walk with somebody who's transgender is helpful. In the faith communities in particular, we've been sent away, or there's a misunderstanding about who God is, that we are created by God and loved by God, made quite intentionally with a calling also, as all of God's children are. So my first, I would say, there's what's a driving passion for me is that there's a 40% attempted suicide rate for transgender people. And I would add to it those that succeed and those that think about it don't attempt, we're probably pushing a very high number, and even most of us. And so for me, that education leads to understanding and perhaps accepting and welcoming, and if we can get as far as celebrating, then I know I've really made a difference. But that's what I've been doing in our community. The second thing I would say, the difference that I'm making is trying to connect now, and this actually works into the future. What we've been doing at MCC Hartford is we're supporting a church in Columbia, an emerging church. It's not the first church we have helped start. We helped a church in Cuba. But Columbia, for the last 2 years, has been a covenant relationship and supporting. But to do this communion, as I said, communion is this driving need for me to gather us all together in spirit and cross boundaries, cross borders, and cross these differences that we've erected, you know, to separate us from one from another. And so what we've done with Colombia, we did Pride across borders, and we had Mexico and Colombia as we celebrated Pride and communion at the altar. But in spirit, I think that that's the growing passion and call for me. And having gone to South Africa now, I want to include South Africa in that circle. We have a church in San Antonio that's already doing streaming with South Africa. And so bringing the world together and really erasing these separations that we've created with one to another.
So what has your spiritual attention at this time? What seems to be the message on your mind and in your heart these days?
It's love. It's always going to be love. For me, love is the message. It is the only answer to every question. And part of the calling that I have is to help, you know, in the Christian walk. I would talk about that for a second to say that, you know, we can talk about all religions have some form of the golden rule, which is to, you know, is to love one another. And in the Christian walk, we have the two greatest commands, which is to love God, love one another. And we forget that equation, which is love one another as you love yourself. And so the harm that's being done in religion is to separate us from ourselves, and to not love ourselves, and to not be able to love God, because how could God love me and I become unlovable? And how can I love everybody else if I don't love me and I don't love God? How can I love everyone else? So those two commands are the driving impetus to all that I do, is to say that we are loved, lovable, intentionally made, and a blessing and blessed, and bring that message into the world. And that's as true and just as true for transgender folk, as gay folk, as every folk that God has created. All of us are integral pieces to this beautiful picture that God has created or creating. And each puzzle piece, if you will, is needed for the complete picture. None of us are expendable, and all of us are blessed and needed.
And so as you look at Metropolitan Community Church, what's your vision for the future?
To do more of this work internationally, but also locally, to make sure that we are a sanctuary, and we are that, for people that are looking for a safe place, to be welcome, affirmed, and celebrated, that there are no conditions The altar and the communion is open. So are our hearts. And we are very much a family type church in that we, many of us, don't have family that are supportive. So we become your family if that's what you need. But we are your spiritual partners as you wish to walk with us and permit us and welcome us to walk with you on your journey.
And so if someone wants to experience your ministry, how do they find out more?
They can go on our website, which is www.mcchartford.com. We have a brand new website, so I invite all your listeners to check it out because it's new and approved.
And it's very lovely.
And it's very lovely.
And when are your services?
At 10 o'clock on Sunday mornings with fellowship following.
And so if a person wanted to walk in the door and experience the Metropolitan Worship experience, what might they have as an experience? What can they expect?
Well, what I hope what they find is the unconditional love of God, the spirit of a living God in that place, and the love of a community that greets them right at the door.
And what's your music like?
Well, we have a blend of music. We actually, one of our assisting ministers is Pentecostal, so we have a piece that's put your hands in the air and give God a hand clap. We have contemporary music after the sermon. That's my. And then we have, of course, the hymns that you might be familiar with in any of your church experience.
Reverend Aaron Miller, we thank you for your presence here at Rich Answers, and we look forward to hearing more about your ministry in the future. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
What will it be like when my pain is gone and all the worries of this world just fade away? What will it be like when you call my name in that moment when I see you face to face? I'm waiting my whole life to hear you say, well,
When everyone else all around could only see the worst in me. I wish I had a witness tonight. Said he saw the best in me. I guess I'm the only one that got this testimony. When everyone else around me could only see the worst in me. Can I tell y'all one more time, one more time? I said he saw the best in me. When everyone else around me could only see the worst in me. I wish I had a witness tonight. All I need is one. Hey!
He saw the best in me.
When everyone else around me, yeah.
Could only see the worst in me.
Does anybody have that testimony? When folk walked you off, said you would never make it, what did he see?
He saw the best in me.
When everyone else around me, yeah.
Could only see the worst in me.
Can I tell y'all one more thing? I just need to tell you one more thing. Listen to this. See, he's mine, and I am his. It doesn't matter what I did. He only sees me for who I am. Does anybody know that tonight? See, he is mine, and I am his. Said it doesn't matter what I did. See, he only sees me for who I am.
Help me sing it.
The girl said that he is mine.
He's mine.
I'm his.
I'm
his. Said it doesn't matter what
I did.
He only sees me for who I am.
You've been listening to Rich Answers, a public affairs program of the Conference of Churches and a production of the 224 Ecospace. Reach out to us and tell us what you think. Look for Rich Answers, the Conference of Churches, and me, Reverend Dr. Shelley Bess, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Like us, follow us, share us.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.